Welcome to Football Never Sleeps, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. We're still aspiring to be viral and way over caffeinated tonight. And as always, a proudly sponsored weekly YouTube show all about Notre Dame football and a fan base that's probably getting a little bit worn out from all the clickbait headlines involving Marcus Freeman. I'm Eric Hansen, sitting in South Bend, and definitely not a candidate to be the next LSU coach. He's Tyler James, sitting in LaPorte with a post-bye week smile, I hope. Together, we are the word salad avoiding content creators at blueandgold.com. On tonight's show, Notre Dame starts its five-game November stretch at intermittent rival Boston College and a little bit banged up. Nine players listed as questionable. What's not questionable is what they need to do to get to the college football playoff. We'll talk about some of those issues, recruiting, and your questions. So start filling up the queue. This is Football Never Sleeps.
All right. Eric must have been practicing his intros during the bye week because he nailed that. There was no rust involved at all. Well done, Eric. As Eric mentioned, Football Never Sleeps is presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. At Academy Sports and Outdoors, we proudly honor our brave military and first responders for everything you do to protect our nation and serve our local communities. We appreciate your unmatched dedication and countless sacrifices. And from October 19th through November 11th, we're giving you our salute with 10% off your sports and outdoors purchases at your local Academy store and online at academy.com/discount. Exclusions apply. Wanted to say thank you for everyone tuning in live. We want to hear what you guys did with your bye weekend in the chat, so let us know what you did as well. Shout out to Scott, Irish fan, Rob and Rudy in the chat. I'm seeing a lot of, I don't know if the YouTube's doing it differently. I think we got handles rather than names. I'm not sure what that's all about. But Rob and Rudy should be, I think Jeff Stevens. So I think if we call you by something differently, I'm seeing something different on my end in terms of names for you guys. So I apologize if I call you something you're not used to. But let's get into our Marcus Freeman media session. But first, a reminder to like the video, subscribe to us here on the channel if you're not already. Consider a subscription to us on blueandgold.com as well. New users can sign up for the first week of an annual subscription for just $1, if you head over to blueandgold.com and hit the Join Now button at the top of the page, you can take advantage of that new subscriber deal. And like I alluded, Marcus Freeman spoke to reporters today and started to look ahead at Boston College. What were your takeaways from Marcus Freeman's press conference, Eric?
Well, it's interesting because it was kind of a scattered press conference, and I think they were really good questions. People just had different agendas, all kinds of different things that they wanted to know about. It was more kind of cleaning up than really information seeking. So for me, maybe the three big takeaways. Number one was what he had to say about the quarterbacks, both CJ Carr and Kenny Minchie. Two was kind of elaboration on the injury front. And then three is what they got done during the bye week, what their objectives were and what they were able to accomplish. How about you, Tyler?
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about the injuries later. Some of it were injury related, but not as it related to the guys that maybe won't play this week. He mentioned Noah Burnett feeling much better as we go into the week, and he's no longer on the injury report. That should be good news for Notre Dame. He talked about the health of Christian Gray when talking about what Christian Gray's been going through. He said he's a guy that's pretty injured and banged up, but the thing about Christian is he's such a tough individual that he never wants to come out of the game, never wants to tell somebody how he's truly feeling. And Marcus even said, we know he's banged up without him even saying it. So that's been part of their evaluation of Christian Gray as well. And then I asked him about the scout team offensive line because I was doing the math in my head of like, okay, they have so many offensive linemen who are either out or questionable with concussions. What is the scout team offensive line looking like? And he revealed that Brennan Vernon, Armel Mukum, and Sean Savolano are among the defensive linemen who have been playing some scout team line for Notre Dame in some recent weeks. Max Anderson, who's a walk-on, and Owen Strebe, who is a freshman, have basically been the offensive line constants there with the defensive line stepping up to help out there. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Cool.
All right, let's get into the injury updates. Notre Dame will be without a pair of starting linemen against Boston College. Left guard Billy Shrouth, who's dealing with a knee injury, and defensive tackle Gabriel Rubio, who has an elbow injury. First, Eric, I wanted to get your thoughts on how long Notre Dame can survive without Rubio. Obviously, Notre Dame played against USC without him. And when do you think his absence will be noticed most if he's not back by then?
I think they can survive into the postseason without him. They'd obviously love to have him because you're counting on more guys to step up, like Jason Anye, who did against USC. I think the game where he'll probably show up the most not being there is Navy. I mean, having a big 6'5" physical guy like that kind of stuffing the fullback and limiting Navy's options, pun intended, I think that would be the game I think they would miss the most. The rest of these teams are really pass first and run as an afterthought kind of teams, and that's what Gabe is best at, is run defense. How about you? What's your thoughts on that? And we can do Shrouth.
Yeah, we're on the same page with that. And none of these teams besides Navy really run the ball very well. So I'm not sure that they can take advantage of his absence. I think that would be noticeable against Navy. Maybe Notre Dame will have some guys step up that haven't had chances to excel against a Navy team in the past. So I would be curious to see, like, what does Elijah Hughes and Jared Dawson do against the Navy? Like, those will be maybe new. I'm not 100% sure if Jared Dawson has never played against Navy, but I would guess he probably hasn't. I don't remember Navy playing Louisville in recent years. But so I would think there's some interesting guys that will be maybe facing that challenge for the first time. Rubio's experience would certainly be helpful with that. But he could still sort of lend that experience and that knowledge, even if he's not able to be out there on the field with those guys. And certainly someone like Donovan Heinisch would seemingly be very valuable against Navy and can help with the leadership aspect of it. All right, yeah, so same questions about Billy Shrouth. How long do you think Notre Dame can survive without Shrouth, and when will his absence be noticed the most?
You know, I don't think that they're going to rush him back. I think they want to make sure that he's 100%. My sense is that they can get through the regular season again without him. The team that will test that the most is Pittsburgh. They rush the passer very well. They sell out against the run, so they're penetrating a lot. They're one of the top teams in the country in tackles for loss. And so not having his physicality in the run game and maybe not having as good a pass protector. Sullivan Apsher is really good, but Billy Shrouth is really, really good. So that would be the game for me that it would show up the most. But again, I think getting him 100% is the objective. And, you know, Joe Rudolph said in the spring, I want to develop 10 deep so I have confidence in the five guys we'd have to plug in if people got hurt. So far, they've had to do that.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried about what the line is going to look like without Billy Shrouth. I just think he's that good. I thought he's been clearly Notre Dame's best offensive lineman this season. I'm not sure that Boston College or Navy has the personnel to make a difference against Notre Dame without Billy Shrouth. I think Pittsburgh does. But even beyond that, I'm just curious, like, how consistent will Notre Dame's offensive line play be without him? Like, how they could cover up the absence of Ashton Craig. How do you cover up the absence of both Craig and Shrouth? And so that'll be a bigger task for Notre Dame, and I'm curious what that looks like. So maybe it doesn't cost them in terms of wins and losses, but I think it could impact the consistency, the explosiveness, and maybe some drives where you're used to being able to get 6 yards on a rushing carry to start the series, and maybe you're not able to consistently get that as often when you have someone like Billy Shrouth out. So I think that is a concern, and we'll see how Notre Dame handles it. Certainly we've seen Joe Rudolph handle Notre Dame offensive linemen going down in previous years. So it'll be another test for the Irish to go without Billy Shrouth. And as you mentioned earlier, there's 9 players who were listed as questionable for Saturday's game. Most of them are injuries that we have already been known about and have been impacting the team. I imagine we'll get some clarity later in the week, as soon as Thursday, on some of those guys. The biggest revelation from my perspective was Jordan Botello being out with a concussion. How would you, I mean, we don't know if Botello will play or not, but I'm just curious, what do you think of the season Jordan Botello is having?
It's quietly effective is the way that I would probably phrase it. He has been pretty solid against the run, just really fundamentally sound against run or pass. We haven't seen the sack totals, but I think he's done a good job of still creating some pressures. And I still think his best football this season is ahead of him. He had two major injuries. He had the knee injury back in September of 2024, recovers from that just in time to tear his pec. And he was, the original timeline felt like it was going to be October, and he comes back and he plays in the opener, and they, you know, kind of gradually upped his reps. I think because he missed so much time, there was a little bit more rust than there was for Boubacar Traore, who was injured kind of in a similar timeline last year. But I think it's, again, I think there's nothing but improvement ahead of him. And I think that's why they've invested in him as a starter, putting him on the bookend from Boubacar Traore.
Yeah, I think he's stepped up in doing that. Like, I'm not sure that that maybe is his best position, even though Notre Dame has talked about trying to make those positions similar. Quiet was one of the words that came to mind too when I thought about Jordan Botello's season. I don't know that he's made as big of an impact as I thought he may. And if he is out for this game or an extended period of time, I think Notre Dame needs guys to step up. You would think now's got to be the time of year where Bryce Young starts to show some more strides. And certainly you have experienced guys like Junior Tuihalamaka and Joshua Burnham available. So we'll see what Notre Dame does if Jordan Botello can't get out there to play. I don't have any insight on whether his concussion was from the USC game or happened in practice last weekend.
For Botello or who was that?
Botello.
Yeah. I know some of the concussions happened actually during the bye week. I want to say Augustine's did. Was one that was during the bye week. They got really physical ahead of the USC game as well. They had some super physical practices, which are not normal this deep into the season, but with the bye week coming up and knowing how much of a physical tone they wanted to set against USC, they were banging on some people in practice.
I think Augustine wasn't dressed for the USC game, so it could have been something different that he was dealing with before the USC game.
I'm sorry. I probably misspoke. It was ahead of the USC game. It was going into that week. They banged on him to get him ready. I misspoke. I meant before the bye week rather than – or before USC rather than after. But, yes, that was the case. Yeah.
Glad we got clarity on that. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right, let's hop into some questions before we talk about Brian Kelly and Marcus Freeman a little bit. Smoking Scott says, what do you guys think about the theory of when you lose means more in the long run? I'm still not convinced we will have a bunch of undefeated teams this year in the playoffs.
Well, I think what the committee tries to do is look at who the 12 best teams are at the end of the year, including the conference champs. So obviously maybe you're taking 11-1, 11 best, and then the one group of six team. But yeah, I think it is easier to be perceived as one of the better teams if your losses are early. Mm-hmm. Because when you look at just at the Notre Dame example, I'm not sure that you would get a consensus that Notre Dame would beat Texas A&M if they played again, but I think a lot of people think Notre Dame would beat Miami if they played again, given how much better the offensive line is, given how much better CJ Carr is, given how much better Notre Dame's defensive pass rush are. I think there'd be a pretty good chance that they would win that game. And I think that's the way it is for a lot of teams. I mean, you've got a head of steam going. It doesn't mean that those losses don't count, but if you play your best football and you're an improving team, it puts doubt in the committee's mind that you would actually lose those games if you replayed those.
Yeah, I definitely think it if you lose early, it doesn't hurt you as much, which is part of the reason I'm not as against opening up the season with tough opponents, just because I think if you're going to play tough games early in the season, I don't think you're going to be, those are going to be held up against you as much. And especially with Notre Dame not having a conference championship game to maybe get an extra good mark at the end of the season. I think it, especially for Notre Dame, if you're going to lose early and then win out. And even if you're not running a crazy gauntlet the rest of the season, if you can impress and win a couple of tougher games along the way, then I think you're in decent shape. And so that's probably going to be a winning recipe for Notre Dame moving forward if that's how they want to play it. Robin Rudy says, can the players with concussions play with padded / protective helmets? To be clear, I'm not saying it's a good idea just if it's allowed per NCAA.
You cannot play in a game until you are cleared. You go, there is concussion protocol, and until you pass through those stages, you can't play in a game. If you're wearing a Zeppelin on your head, you can't, I mean, that headgear doesn't matter. You have to pass through all those because, I mean, it's a brain safety issue. There's no way they're going to modify the equipment. It's all about passing through and making sure you're 100% ready to play.
Yeah. And I do believe, I was just Googling, I think you can wear the Guardian caps in games. I'm not sure that I can remember seeing a college football player, at least in a Notre Dame game, wear one. I've seen it start to trickle into the NFL in terms of some of those guys wearing the Guardian cast. But yeah, that doesn't like allow you to come back sooner if you have a concussion. You have to get cleared of the concussion protocol, and then wearing something like that is usually a personal choice in terms of whether or not a player wants to use that. I know they've used them in practices, but I'm not sure that I can recall, at least in a Notre Dame game, someone wearing one of those.
I have not seen it in a college game.
Brian Habermill says, Brian Kelly is a very good coach. James Franklin and Brian Kelly prove that sometimes being very good is not enough. Was Marcus asked about Brian Kelly today?
He was, and we bet that he would be asked, and we were not disappointed, and he had a good answer to it. He basically, you know, was also asked kind of the state of college football in general, that all these coaches are being fired. And, you know, he's like, you know, we get into the profession knowing that this is a possible consequence, but you need to really focus on what you're trying to do at your job and not worry about what could go wrong. So forth. That's the very, very abbreviated. Jack Sobel, our teammate, has a story on that at blueandgold.com if you want to see kind of the whole discussion that played out there.
All right. Scott Fegan says, because of the injuries, do we see Will Black getting some significant playing time moving forward?
He and Augustine both have. I had an intel piece, a couple of intel pieces the last few days. Both those guys have been super impressive lately. Both of them have concussions right now, so they're both on the questionable list. When they get healthy, it's possible you'll see either or both down the road kind of challenging at least to get into the two deeps. And given that there's all these scout team players from the defensive line, they're not too far away from being in the one deeps.
Yeah.
But both of those guys have been really impressive. Cam Heron too. I mean, three out of the four freshmen have really delivered in terms of being ahead of the curve, because that's kind of unusual for a bunch of true freshmen. Usually you might get one or two, but to have three of them that have done so well that you could trust them in a game, I think is saying something.
Yeah. I wrote the story about the scout team offensive line and trying to run through, okay, who's probably running with the backups on the offensive line behind the starters. And I could account for the guard spots, but there's really only one backup tackle right now with Styles Prescott, if you exclude Matty Augustine because of his concussion. Robbie Wolin is a walk-on that was not mentioned or listed anywhere. So I don't know if he's the backup right tackle behind Emil Wagner. I know Gerby Lambert, I believe, is listed on the depth chart. So he's pretty busy as the starting right guard right now. So I think Augustine, as long as he's healthy, I think should be taking second team offensive tackle reps based on the guys who are available. Will Black, I'm not sure that he has made that leap earlier in the season, but I think, yeah, he would be in the conversation because I think the two backups now are Chris Tarek and Devin Houston, I think would be the two backup guards right now based on who's available and healthy.
The money quote from a source I had was Will Black is, I mean, Matty Augustine is, I think, ahead of Will Black right now. The source told
people were so mad at me when I said that in the fall or in the preseason.
but they also said, the source also said that it's going to be hard to keep Will Black out of the starting lineup next year. That's how good he is. And Augustine too. I mean, those guys are really, really talented. You think about two guys that played their high school football in New England, you normally don't think of as early achievers, but those guys have played decent competition and they've adjusted to the speed of the game very well. So that's a good thing. You mentioned the whole right tackle, right guard thing. You know, we saw in when Emile Wagner had to come out of the game, it was a couple of games ago, it was a home game, and Gerby slid over to the right tackle, and I think right. Absher came in. You know, you could have a scenario where Chris Tarek came in, even though he's listed as the second team. I mean, I think Chris Tarek is second team everything right now, in the interior, or at least third team. So that's a possibility, but they'd certainly not like to get down where they're having to look at those scenarios. They like to get some of these guys back.
Another question from Scott Fegan is, do you expect to see more freshmen getting playing time going forward? The secondary could use a rest, as would the running backs.
I do think that you're going to see more freshmen playing because there's a lot of them that haven't even played a single play this year. I think on defense there were maybe nine of them that hadn't played any plays, and Ethan Long's played two. And on offense, it's similar numbers. There's maybe 10 that haven't played. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. But it's big numbers. But now they can get to where they can play a lot of those guys in four out of the last five games if they want to. They can sprinkle them into special teams. They could bring them in late. There's some guys that have earned some maybe a little bit higher leverage snaps and so forth. When you're saying secondary, like Ethan Long and Jadon Blair, I think if you're going to see somebody at safety of those two, it would be Ethan Long. As far as the corners, I mean, they're already playing two freshmen there. They want to get Devontae Smith back.
Yeah.
I don't think Cree Thomas is real close to seeing meaningful snaps in a game unless it were on special teams.
Yeah, the way the schedule is, I mean, there should be opportunities for guys to play when the game is already decided. And so these guys will get rest, whether or not it's a freshman playing or someone else who doesn't play as much, because I think Notre Dame should be winning by lopsided margins in a number of these games. Now, will they all come in a stretch close to each other or spread out? I think probably more spread out, especially because it can be hard to build a lead on Navy if Navy's holding the ball a lot. So we'll see how that all plays out. But I think there should be opportunities for guys to get on the field, and we'll see who steps up, who gets more opportunities, and what that means in terms of if Notre Dame goes to a playoff, are there some guys that maybe they can trust on special teams more that got some opportunities in these games on defense and stuff like that? I think there's a number of different ways they could go with that. Mike DeVoy says, if we're blowing out Boston College and Minchie gets a few drives under his belt, do you think Tyler Buchner or Blake Hebert gets in for a series?
I think it would be Tyler Buchner, but they may want to take a look at Hebert. I know this, that Buchner is decidedly ahead of Hebert in terms of depth chart. Like if you needed to use a quarterback, it would be Buchner. They may want to just get Blake's feet wet since he theoretically is going to be around next year. Tyler Buchner will be out of eligibility. So I think that's what they would have to weigh in that situation is, you know, do we want to get his feet wet? I mean, this would be kind of the game that you would think Blake would play in, since he played his, he's a Canadian kid, but he played his high school football in New England. And so this might be the game to try to get him in if it's a blowout. Now, Boston College was very competitive with Louisville. They've lost 7 games in a row, but they were competitive with Louisville last week.
Yeah, I think I would imagine those reps would be more valuable for Hebert than Tyler Buchner. Like, Tyler Buchner knows what it's like to get out in a game. It's not like this wouldn't be a new sensation for him. And like, if you're giving him just 1 or 2 series, he's probably handing the ball off mostly. And so like, I think it would probably be more beneficial for Blake Hebert than Tyler Buchner in a scenario like that. And obviously, like you mentioned, if we're talking about trying to get someone ready to play in an emergency in 2 weeks, then Notre Dame would be in a situation where it's trying to get Buchner some more opportunities. But I think a game situation like that, I'm not sure that he would necessarily need something like that. All right, let's get into some of the head coaching talk and talk a little bit about Brian Kelly, Marcus Freeman. We have some of questions related to that. Just quickly, what are your thoughts on Brian Kelly getting fired down at LSU? Are you surprised that it ended this quickly?
Yes, I will say that. I'll do a yes, and then I have a little bit of explanation. I mean, once it got close to the end, no, but right. I mean, if you had said at the beginning, Brian Kelly will last only 4 years at LSU, no, I wasn't taking that bet. My concern, and we talked about it between each other, is I was concerned whether he would be a fit down there. I think Brian Kelly can coach, but I think some of the things like, can he hire the right assistants? Can he keep the right assistants? I knew he'd have the resources, but again, I've seen so many coaches that are really good coaches go to somewhere where they don't fit and they don't do well. I'm not saying Brian Kelly didn't do well, but man, I was listening. I was driving back from Ohio, listening to the Texas A&M, the end of the Texas A&M LSU game. And man, on the LSU radio network, whoo, I was not surprised that he was going to get fired. Listening to those guys, they would have loved to just plucked him off the sideline and fired him at that point. How about you, Tyler? Were you surprised?
Yeah, I similar to what you said. I think he is a quality coach. I think where he excels as a coach is more of a manager type than an X's and O's guy, than a buddy of the players guy. And I thought that maybe that's what LSU needed in terms of getting things all moving in the right direction and someone that understands what you need to do to win at a high level. And that didn't seem to, however, that hasn't seemed to have played out in that way. And as the days go by after his firing, I imagine we're going to continue to hear more and more about what people thought went wrong and how it went wrong. And it feels like there was a growing disconnect between the program and what Brian Kelly wanted to do and what was needed to happen. So it seems like it's turned into quite a mess down there. And that's why it escalated so quickly into him being fired.
Yeah. I mean, the first couple of years they had trouble on defense, and then Mike Denbrock leaves and the problems go over to the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike Denbrock, seemingly got out at the right time there at LSU. And as we've seen with every big opening seemingly so far in this coaching carousel cycle, which just started earlier, Marcus Freeman continues to be named on these hot boards for the high profile jobs, Penn State, Florida, LSU, among the latest. Do you think there is any reason for concern that Marcus Freeman may leave? Does Notre Dame have any choice but to give Freeman another raise already?
I do not think that there's reason for concern. If they want to give him a raise, I think, you know, putting him in where he deserves to be with the market, with all these new guys getting hired, I think that could make some sense. I don't know how many years you have to add to his contract. I don't think that that's necessarily what he's looking for. And he's got really good support from the administration. They're building the Shields Family Hall, which is a great football facility that's going to help them expand beyond the Goug. But I think, yeah, I mean, is he due for the raise? If he goes 10-2 and they get in the playoff, absolutely he deserves a raise. If they go 8-4, I'm not sure you want to give him a raise.
Yeah, I think that's tough because there's just so many places that I think would still hire him away and pay him more if he wanted to leave. And so that's the game of chicken that Notre Dame would potentially have to play. I think if you're Notre Dame, you hope you keep winning and don't have to worry about that and that you make the playoff again and he deserves another raise. I think Notre Dame's going to have to be prudent in making sure that it does what it needs to do to get him to stay, whether that's another raise or something else that incentivizes him to stay that he believes gives the program more strength or his coaching staff more strength. I think it could go poorly, but I don't anticipate doing that. I think Notre Dame would have to be stubborn for it to go in a way to not work out where Marcus Freeman ends up staying at Notre Dame.
Yeah, the thing about it is I think the hot boards are not as in touch with reality as, let's say, Las Vegas is. I got an email today from one of the betting sites, and they were talking about they listed the odds of where Brian Kelly will end up next, and they also listed the odds for all the other openings. And Marcus Freeman was only listed on a couple of those and no more than a 20-1 shot, 20-1 at Florida and 50-1 at Penn State. None of the other jobs that are open was he listed as even a long shot candidate for. So again, I think a lot of times this is speculation or it's agents talking or whatever, but I do not expect him to go anywhere. That's why I kind of get fatigued from those kind of stories, because I think they really are clickbait unless you have some great inside information.
Yeah, I don't know that I would agree that Vegas knows more. I think they're just trying to make money. I don't know how much money is actually bet on those future, long-term future odds in terms of the next head coaches. I think those are just as much about garnering conversation as hot boards can be at times. And I think like initial hot boards are the most meaningless because it's just like, well, how are you possibly going to know who the next head coach is going to be immediately after the head coach was fired? Like it usually doesn't work out that simply that the first guy that people think might end up being the next coach is going to be the next coach. Obviously sometimes there's obvious fits, but the hot boards are conversation starters, names to know, names to consider. And I think from everything that I've seen, at least from the On3 reports, it's just mentioning Marcus Freeman as, hey, you got to at least talk to him. It's not like Marcus Freeman is going to leave this place to go, leave Notre Dame to go to this place. And that's why we're putting him on this list. So I think context is important when sort of digesting the information that gets put out there. MJH Irish says, hey guys, give me an over under of Marcus Freeman being at Notre Dame for another 5 years.
I don't know what that means, over under for 5 years. So that saying that's not a yes or no question. I'm supposed to say he'd be there 4 years or six or more. Is that what I'm?
Yeah. Will he be here for four or less years or six or more years?
I would say six or more years.
Yeah, I would probably go over. It's hard to know like when he would feel the need to move on. If there's an NFL job that attracts him, if he sees that as a fit for him, obviously it would seem to me that the one job that would be the most interesting for him at the college level would be Ohio State. And I don't know that that's going to be opening up anytime soon, although like Ohio State's just like every other place, right? If someone starts losing a bunch of games, like they might not have patience for Ryan Day, even though he won a national championship. So we'll see how that plays out, but I would take the over right now. All right. Kevin Garber says chances we see a playoff team go into the playoffs without a head coach.
I don't think so. I can't think of somebody that's in contention for a playoff that would lose their head coach. And if you're talking about coaches that would hire away like Lane Kiffin, because Ole Miss would be in the playoff if it were today. I don't think he would leave before the playoff, or at least not going in. I'd have a hard time seeing him leave a team that's in the playoff. I don't think that would happen. Most coaches that we've seen in the past, like Notre Dame was really interested in Luke Fickell, and there was no way he was even going to talk to Notre Dame after Brian Kelly left until Cincinnati had played in the playoff. And so that timeline didn't work for them. Not to say they would have hired him, but that was somebody that we're strongly interested in. College football is so weird. I mean, I never can remember this many in-season firings. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's weird enough to do that, but I can't imagine. I mean, you go to a school to win a championship, and if your team's going to be in the playoff, I don't know why you would abandon them at that point. That seems like something that you shouldn't do and wouldn't do.
Yeah. Well, technically Brian Kelly did that, right? I mean, he didn't know for sure that his team wasn't in the playoff, right? Wasn't that what happened at the end of the 2021 season?
They were not in the field at the time that he left. There wasn't a great chance they were going to move up. There's a possibility that they could move into the top four, but they weren't likely to move up into the top four.
Yeah, I don't know that it seems likely, but I don't know so much as it seems to be changing by the year in terms of what is acceptable or common in terms of the coaching carousel. I think these programs are going to apply a lot of pressure to try to get someone to do that. I think from their perspective, they probably want the coaches they're interested in to not make the playoffs. So that's not a concern, so they can get the coach they want. But obviously making the playoff is an achievement, and it would be a hard time to talk a coach out of sort of chasing the chance to win a national championship. Brian Habermill says, what's Jaden Greathouse's injury status?
Questionable still with the thigh injury.
All right. If Endy doesn't, according to this is Jeff Stevens, if Endy doesn't work out the series with USC, who might fill that spot on the schedule in 2026?
I'm not sure. I haven't thought that far ahead. I've thought more long-term. Jack Sobel and I did a point counterpoint on that a few weeks ago, and my thought was maybe Miami, you know, do something with Miami and Florida State instead of the California schools, or rotating SEC teams, like schedule home and home for 2 years with an SEC team, then a different SEC team. That was my number one goal, but I haven't really thought that far in advance. That what I had heard is that they're pretty close to getting a two-year extension, but again, it's when the games would be played that's the hang up on that. So I think until that falls through, then I will invest. I only have so much bandwidth, Jeff. There's only so many brain cells, and that stretches me too far.
Yeah, the only thing I would mention is it's probably a lower caliber opponent, right? I would imagine if we're talking less than a year out that it would have to be someone that in the group of six or something like that. I think Notre Dame would be in a bad spot in terms of trying to fill a place on a schedule. And I mean, unless someone wants to break their contract within a year of something else they have scheduled, because I think there is sometimes a financial incentive to keep your games on schedule rather than canceling them and dealing with the fallout of that. And maybe Notre Dame would have to money up to get someone to break a contract elsewhere. All right. I wanted to get to stuff we had put on our agenda for last week's show, but didn't find time for, but we'll find some time for tonight. And that is a bit of an expectation game I created for Eric and I, evaluating Notre Dame's players through the first seven games of the season. Eric, from your perspective, which three players have most surpassed your expectations of them heading into the season?
I'm going to go number one, Jordan Faison. I thought he'd be good. I think he's better than good. Number two, Elijah Hughes. I wasn't sure he'd even get on the field in meaningful downs this year. He's playing meaningful downs and playing them well. He played really well against USC. And this is kind of an interesting one for me. I put CJ Carr on the list. I think he's been better than I expected him 7 games in. Now, I thought eventually he'd be really good, but I thought we'd maybe see more growing pains in those first 7 games. He's been better than I thought he'd be this early. How about you? Who'd you have?
We have the first two the same. Jordan Faison is someone we did an exercise before the season in ranking our top 25 players in terms of the impact they would make this season. I had Jordan Faison ranked 25th. And I think he's way higher than that in terms of what he's done as Notre Dame's leading receiver. So I've been very impressed by him as sort of a constant presence for the Irish offense. I had Hughes too. He was a total afterthought from my perspective in terms of someone that could make an impact in a not top heavy, but a deep defensive tackle room. He's been stepping up when asked and someone that's in that conversation on a game to game basis in terms of someone who can make a difference for Notre Dame on the defensive line. My third guy was Dallas Golden. I liked him a lot as a recruit. I'm on a signing period superlative. I described him as Notre Dame's biggest get and had him as the runner up for earliest impact, but to be able to do what he's been able to do in terms of essentially being a starting nickelback for several games and even handle the task of moving outside against USC so Leonard Moore can chase Mekhi Lemon. I've been very impressed with what he's been able to do, so I wanted to include him on my list. Which three players do you have in mind who've most failed to meet your expectations heading into the season?
I would start number one with Jalen Stroman. I thought he had a really good chance to start. I think he's the number four safety right now. He's made some plays. He was productive earlier in the year and also had some coverage lapses, for lack of a better term. Two, I would go with Donovan Heinisch, a guy that's a captain who I think plays with a lot of effort and has played well. I also think he's been banged up at times, just hasn't shown up the way that I thought maybe he would after being named the captain. The third would be Emil Wagner, who had a pretty good game against USC. Up to that point, I thought was really struggling with his run blocking and compared with last season, just wasn't as physical. But he showed up in the USC game.
All right. My three were, I went with some high profile guys that I included in my, at least for my top two. They were my top seven in terms of players going into the preseason. I have Drake Bowen at number one. I think he started to return to that level of play in recent weeks. But in terms of, I thought he may take the next step and be the clear best linebacker on Notre Dame's team this season. And I'm not sure that's necessarily always been the case. So he's number one for me, but I've liked the way that he's come on lately. Number two was Emil Wagner, who I had seventh going into the season. He was another guy that I thought he would take the leap and be like a potential draft pick coming out of the season. I'm not sure that's the trajectory he's on, at least in terms of the way he's played this season. And so I think there's been some disappointment there from my perspective. And then number three is Jaden Greathouse. Obviously high expectations for him coming off of the end of last season. Certainly some of this is injury related where he hasn't been out on the field for several games now, but the fact that he wasn't making big impacts early in the season was a surprise to me. And I thought he would contribute more there. All right. Are there any players who haven't met your expectations, but you're still holding out hope for this season?
There's four that I put on this list. Jason Anye, Jordan Botello, Bryce Young, and Christian Gray. Not that, like, Anye showed up against USC, the version of what Marcus Freeman was talking about in August, that guy showed up against USC. Hadn't seen him this year, so that was very encouraging. Jordan Botello, again, I think his best football is going to be over November, December, January, if Notre Dame gets that far. Bryce Young, a lot of us thought he would have a breakthrough year this year after showing some pretty tantalizing glimpses of that last year. I think he's, when you look at his Pro Football Focus grades, they pretty actually decent grades. He's just not been that dynamic big play guy. And then Christian Gray, you know, again, he had the shoulder injury in the Miami game and has been playing through that. He's been up and down, probably too up and down for how talented he is. So those are my four. How about you?
Yeah, I included Gray on my list as well. He just hasn't been as consistent as I would have expected him to be, but I do think that he could finish the season strong. Emil Wagner, someone that I think is in that boat too, even though I don't know that he's played as well as I expected him to. I do think he could finish the season strong. He is at least fortunate in terms of having a consistent guard next to him. In terms of Kirby Lambert, he hasn't had to deal with injury issues with the guy playing next to him. So I think continued chemistry between those two could pay off for Emil Wagner as the season moves on. And I have Bryce Young as well. He just hasn't made the impact that I think we maybe over-anticipated coming into this season. And I do think there's still a chance that he could, down the stretch here, have some big moments for Notre Dame. All right, let's talk a little bit about the defense, Eric. It seems like a long time ago when we were constantly fretting over Notre Dame's defense, because the improvement has been pretty significant since the first three games of the season. What aspect of improvement has been the most impressive to you?
Well, this is going to be kind of counterintuitive, I guess. From an aspect of what they do well, the run defense has rocketed up the national rankings. They are 17th going into the Boston College game against one of the worst rush offenses. But in terms of a position group, I'd say the safeties. When Tay Johnson became a starter, that elevated that group. Luke Talge has done a really good job as the third safety. I really like with the safety group. So the run defense on one end, and the safeties are part of the run defense, but those are the two things that jump out at me. How about you?
Yeah, I think the way that Notre Dame's went less about position groups and more about a little bit statistical in terms of being more sound in coverage, like that we see with our eyes, but I think it's matched up with the improvement that Notre Dame has made statistically. Through the first three games of the season, Notre Dame's pass efficiency on defense was ranked 103rd. And now they're, or at least at this time last week, I didn't update these numbers. They were 40th in pass efficiency defense.
They are still.
So that has been impressive in terms of what Notre Dame has done. And then the pass rush, I think we talk a lot about the defensive back improvement, and Marcus Freeman was always like, hey, it's more than just the DBs. We got to get the pass rush to sync up with what we're trying to do on the back end. And Notre Dame's pass rush was terrible at the beginning of the season. They were 105th after the first three games with 1.33 sacks per game. They've increased that by more than a sack per game with 2.43 per game. They were 33rd as of last week in pass rush. So that has taken a step up. I've been impressed with what Notre Dame's been able to do there, even with maybe not getting as much out of a Bryce Young or a Joshua Burnham or a Junior Tua Halamaka in terms of guys that can add as pass rushers. But still, as a defensive game plan, they're finding ways to get sacks and get after the quarterback, and I think that's been impressive. What do you think we should expect from the defense moving forward in November?
Dominance. I think improvement and dominance. I think they've figured some things out schematically. They're getting good at those things, and they're playing teams. Every team that they play the rest of the season is one-dimensional one way or the other. You have Navy, who's the best run offense in the country and doesn't throw that much, although they do throw it well when they do, but they're very run-oriented. And then you play four teams that are decent passing teams and awful running teams. And so those are easier teams to prepare for because you're not being constantly put in that pass run dilemma as a defensive coordinator, like you were against USC. Notre Dame had to kind of pick its poison in that game, and they decided to lean into the run and take their chances against the pass, which is scary, and it worked. But against Boston College, there's no mystery on what the defensive game plan is going to be.
Yeah, Boston College did run the ball decently against Louisville, at least comparative to what they've done so far this season. So I'm curious. I didn't watch that game. I'm curious if they tried to do something differently with their new quarterback and how that has changed things up for the Boston College offense. But regardless of that, Notre Dame's defense should obviously have the passing game in mind in terms of trying to stop that. I think you nailed it. Dominance, like continuing to improve, continuing to force turnovers, create havoc. I think those are all things that should be on the table for Notre Dame here in November against some teams that maybe aren't of the same talent level as the teams that Notre Dame struggled against early in the season.
Here's the rushing offense rankings. This is out of 134 of the five teams left that they play. BC's 125, Navy's 1, Pitt 110, Syracuse 115, Stanford 129.
Yeah, pretty bad stuff on the rushing side of things. And we'll see how Notre Dame manages to focus in on the offensive attacks that are very pass heavy. And November is usually not a time of year where you want to be pass heavy if you're playing outdoors, right? Like the chance of poor weather could influence that too. And that spells even worse things for Notre Dame's opponents.
Right. Some of the bad rush offense numbers tie into sacks allowed too, because that goes into your sack totals. So here's the rankings of sacks allowed. This is, you know, if you're number one, that means you don't allow very many. If you're 134, you need to go home to mommy. But Boston College is 111, Navy is 2, Pitt 121, Syracuse 105, and Stanford 121. So none of those teams besides Navy is good at protecting their quarterback, and Navy in part because they just don't throw very much.
All right. Where do you think there is still room for improvement on Notre Dame's defense?
I think everywhere. I think when you're number 59 in total defense, there's still room for improvement. I think, you know, the linebackers could play better, and they have been. I think there's more pass rush for potential for this team, and I think the coverage could be better. It's really going to be interesting to see what Notre Dame's run defense number is at the end of the year. They haven't been this high at 17 at the end of the year, that high since 2012 when they were a top 10 run defense. Now they'll get Navy and that'll skew that, but playing those other poor run offenses, I think Notre Dame has a pretty good chance to finish in the top 15 in run defense. But I think everywhere they can improve, and they have been. Just keep doing what you're doing.
Right. Yeah, that interior run defense, especially with Gabriel Rubio out, is like an obvious area that they need to continue to work on. And I do think the defensive line can help in terms of improvement with its pass rush and not having to rely on the linebackers to get involved as much to create those sacks that I referenced earlier. So those are things like the secondary. I'm curious how they continue to sharpen things up. What can Christian Gray do to make sure that he's playing a more even game throughout games? That's something that maybe isn't going to be crucial in these remaining games of the regular season for Notre Dame, but would be good to see him continue to build confidence there going into the playoff potentially. All right, let's get some more questions. Scott Vegan says, who do you think will be the biggest surprise in the final five regular season games, both offense and defense?
The biggest Notre Dame player surprises?
That's how I interpreted it.
Why don't you go first? Because I'm surprised at the question.
Yeah.
I need time to think of one.
I think it's difficult on offense because so many different guys have played.
Okay,
roles.
I got one on offense.
I would go with Cooper Flanagan just because he hasn't done much yet, even though I don't know that it would be surprising if we start to see more of him and he's productive when he's in there. Defensively, I don't know. Maybe we should go with Bryce Young as a surprise in terms of like him turning the corner and being more productive and getting to where we thought to be. And maybe some people have sort of given up on him. I know people ask questions about him all the time about why aren't we getting more out of Bryce Young? Maybe he surprises some people and gets back to where maybe we expected him to be earlier in the season.
For offense, I'm going to go with Jaden Greathouse. I think once he's healthy, I think he can help Notre Dame a lot in the red zone. And for defense, I'm going to go with Jason Anya. I'm going to say that the USC game's not a fluke, and he's going to continue to flourish down the stretch.
Andy in Georgia asked about Bryce Young. Do you think he's still growing into his body, height, and weight? Seems like he keeps growing.
He does keep growing, and I think there's something to that. I think, was it you that did the story on Bryce Young where Micah Gilbert was saying what a bad wide receiver he was back
yeah.
in the day?
Yeah, and how goofy he was. Yeah.
Yeah, how goofy he was. So I think the goofiness is going away, but, you know, he could be a guy that eventually profiles as an inside player at some point. But I'm really excited about where his future is headed, despite maybe not the huge impact yet this season.
Yeah, I think this probably played a role in terms of what he's been able to do and what he's been trying to adjust himself to doing, and the pressure that comes with a greater role. And I think some of what we saw that we liked at Bryce Young came on special teams, and maybe that there was too much of a belief that that would automatically translate into defense and some of the technique that's required to improve on the defensive line when you're out there so regularly, or part of the things that he's had to adjust to this season. All right. The Ozzie family has a statement and then a question following up. Notre Dame's athletic director's main job is to get a good coach and fight to keep him. The Indiana AD has done his job. If Marcus Freeman leaves, the AD should be fired. It's better to be proactive. What are your thoughts and opinions on that?
I don't think he should be fired if Freeman leaves, but I don't see Freeman leaving. It's kind of like saying, you know, what if I made $1 million next year? Should I give it all to charity? Well, I'm not making $1 million next year, so we don't have to worry about where that's going. And I mean, just giving a coach a raise and an extension doesn't necessarily keep them. There's been a lot of coaches that have been given extensions and raises and they don't stay. I think what Pete Bavakwa has done a great job is helping Marcus Freeman align with the administration and having the wind at his back on a lot of things, including that Shields Family Hall, which I mentioned, and also working with Marcus in terms of admissions with transfer students and so forth. I think Pete's done an amazing job. So, no, I'm not an advocate on firing the athletic director.
Yeah, unless Marcus Freeman came out and left and was like, the only reason I'm leaving is because of Pete Bavakwa. Then I think maybe you start thinking about that. But I don't know that that would be my first reaction, because like there would have to be a belief that the causation of Marcus Freeman leaving was because Pete Bavakwa failed. Like to some level, Pete Bavakwa doesn't control the amount of money available to him. Right. There are people above him that give him the green light on contract extensions and stuff like that. So if there was something that prevented that from happening, why it wouldn't necessarily be his fault if something like that occurred. Obviously we're going further and further down the hypothetical here, but I don't think it's as black and white as the Ozzie family has expressed there. Michael Johnson said, if the BC game goes as planned, how soon should Kenny Minchie enter the game?
I mean, in the fourth quarter, at some point you still want to give CJ Carr the kind of reps he needs to continue his progress. So I could see Kenny playing in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, as soon as it's lopsided enough that Notre Dame feels like he can get out of there without having to worry too much about the outcome being in jeopardy. So whether that's the third quarter or fourth quarter, that would be determined by how well the starting offense plays. So we'll see how clicky that is, but I think there should be.
You got to watch overlooking Boston College. When we were in Fenway Park in 2015, that was one of the worst Boston College teams coming into the game that I've covered. And that was a scary close game. It was a wicked close game.
Oh, well, maybe not playing in Fenway Park is to Notre Dame's advantage. Before we get out of here, Eric, you want to tee me up for a couple of recruiting things?
Absolutely. I will tee you up for some recruiting things. And it's been a wild time with recruiting. Notre Dame, they got a commitment for 2027. Tell us about that 2027 commitment and how many guys are in that class.
Yeah, James Halter is the newest commitment for Notre Dame. He committed last week. He's the son of former Notre Dame player Jordan Halter, who played from 1989 to 93, I believe. And he's a four-star offensive lineman out of Pittsburgh Central Catholic. I think he's a very technically sound player. You can obviously see that his father has had some influence there. His father played for Joe Moore. Obviously very high on the technique side of things. He's a polished pass protector, which is not something you see, especially with juniors in high school. That is not something you see. So I like what I see there. He's a sturdy offensive lineman, plays with a good base. He has like I've described it as an advanced skill set for someone his age. That puts Notre Dame at five commitments in the 2027 class. You have one offensive lineman, Richie Flanagan, and a defensive lineman, quarterback Teddy Girard, linebacker Ellis McGaskin, and long snapper Sean Kraft. So Notre Dame's got a pretty good start to the 2027 class, and a lot of the action moving forward will continue to be in that 2027 class.
And Pittsburgh Central Catholic is one of the few high schools I've gone to and seen Notre Dame coaches at. There was a gaggle of them that night. And they were out on the road last week. Where are some of the important stops that the coaching staff made last week?
Yeah, Marcus Freeman was notably in Florida. He had Jaywan Sider with him for a little bit. And he saw Dylan Faison, Julius Jones Jr., the 2027 wide receiver target from St. Thomas Aquinas. He saw defensive back commit Aiden Pouncey. He went to IMG Academy, which is an obvious powerhouse. Defensive tackle commit Elijah Golden. Nick Sebastian joined him for that trip. Tight end analyst Harris Biven saw Ian Premer play, the Notre Dame commit, and 2027 target Jackson Dollar. Al Washington made a trip to Chicago at Brother Rice High School. That's the home to 2027 defensive tackle Braden Parks, and 2028 defensive end Cameron McGee. Analyst Javon Codlin visited a couple of cornerback commits, Chasten Smith and Kari Adams. So they got all over the country and saw most of their commits, but still some important targets as well, as Notre Dame took advantage of that second bye week.
Awesome. Anything else on the recruiting front we should know?
I don't think so. Plenty of stuff to watch in terms of how things continue to progress. Anytime schools lose coaches in terms of firings, there's a door of opportunity that opens up for poaching. I'm not sure that there's been a lot of obvious connections with, say, like an LSU or Florida, but Penn State certainly is a school that we're continuing to watch its commits in terms of guys that could maybe flip to Notre Dame, whether it's that 2026 or 2027 class. And so we'll be monitoring that. Keep an eye on blueandgold.com for updates there. That'll do it for us this week on Football Never Sleeps. We appreciate everyone tuning in. Make sure you're subscribed to the channel. Hit that like button before you go and let us know what your plans are for the week. All right.
We will smash the like button.
Smash it. Smash it, but politely.